trail showed that he, with a woman and a man, had clambered over the obstacle. What was infinitely more interesting was what lay on the far side of the mountain of Earth. The huge landslide, combined with the barren isolation of the place, had kept it sacrosanct ever since the roiling black clouds of Skydark. The few stragglers who'd made a home in the Ville high above had never bothered to tackle the perilous descent to the raging waters. They didn't need to. From the old trestle bridge, they could peer with a superstitious fear into the Rainbowed Gorge. Before the missiles sang across the sky, that gorge had been one of the great tourist attractions of the Southwest. Not far away had stood the Best Western Running Rapids, a brand new building with its four pools, atrium, and leisure suites, each with individual redwood hot tub. In Deathlands, nobody except the hopelessly insane ever went walking anywhere just for pleasure. There was a warehouse that held half a dozen deflated rafts, a gas-powered generator linked to an air compressor, a changing room that held the rotted shreds of oilskins and orange life jackets. Another, smaller building had been used for administration and contained a desk and some filing cabinets, as well as a tiny word processor and a couple of radios. The only thing that was interesting to Ryan and the others was the larger building and the tracks that led from it down to the edge of the river. Deep scuff marks marred the ground as though something had been dragged down there, with the deeper imprints of three pairs of feet in the soft, pale sand. Ryan, Jack, and JB knelt alongside the tracks, staring intently at them. Jack touched the edges of the footmarks, looking at the way the sand crumbled in at his touch.
Not long.
Yeah, the wind would have faded them more. I'd guess in less than 2 hours.
Ryan looked questioningly at JB.
Maybe even less than two.
Christy called to them from the storage building.
Engine in here is still real warm, and there's a kind of boat half blown up.
Ryan ran toward her, followed by the others, and entered the cool, damp-smelling concrete building. JB had gone immediately to the little gas engine, laying his hand on the top.
Right. Can't be more than an hour. Could be less.
The big raft lay on one side, like a dying amphibian, its flanks streaked with mold, half inflated.
It's obvious what happened.
Please do enlighten us, lover.
Strasser got here, dumped his wag, found this place, and started trying to blow up one of the boats. He got mostly through it, and then either got bored and picked a smaller one, or realized it would be too big for three of them to handle.
They spent 10 minutes trying to get the stubborn gas generator to run, taking turns on the starting cord. Over the years, Ryan had plenty of experience of trying to get pre-nuke machinery to work. It wasn't generally a good time.
About fucking time.
Join up that lead to the big raft. Jack, sort out enough paddles for us all, and a few spares. Mildred, see if any of those float jackets are of any use. Doc, find some lashing cord.
For a quarter of an hour, it was a scene of organized chaos. An additional complication was the fact that the nozzle that connected the generator to the raft was faulty and kept slipping off in a violent hiss of escaping air.
Shit!
It took the combined efforts of Ryan, JB, Christy, and Jack to get enough air into the chambers of the big raft.
We'll never get it full.
I guess this'll do. Turn off the engine, Jack.
The sudden silence in the building was startling. Ryan straightened, holding the small of his back where he could feel a kinked muscle. He looked around at the others.
Report.
Mildred snapped to attention.
Ensign Wyeth, second class, reporting, sir. Regret none of those life jackets would keep a gerbil afloat for 30 seconds, sir!
I don't get it.
Doc straightened at Mildred's side.
Report that I took over paddle duty from Seaman Lauren, sir. Also found enough cord to bind an army. 12 paddles all collected and ready to stow, sir.
And Ryan returned the salute.
Well done, both of you. Put you in for a commendation when we get back to the base.
Thank you, sir.
Then I guess it's time we got this boat on the river.
The remains of a short jetty jutted into the river on the inside of the bend where the water flowed more slowly. All working together, the six friends managed to walk the big inflatable down to the edge, making sure that there was a stout piece of rope to tether it to a solid metal stanchion near the main building. Before embarking, Ryan went and searched quickly through the small office, finding maps of the river that provided details of the various tours on offer to tourists. Half-day morning, half-day afternoon, full day including packed lunch, overnight raft ride with tent accommodation, and an evening barbecue. 2-day trip, all food included. and a 3-day trip that would take you close to the Grandee.
3 days.
Ryan took one of the brightly colored maps, even though it only gave sketchy details of the actual river journey, showing a number of rapids and one or two portage points, depending upon water conditions. Whoever had run the raft operation had given exotic names to some of the more hazardous stretches of the river. Hell's Teeth, Dragon's Drop, Demon's Drop, Devil's Drop. Ryan thought that some of them showed a distinct lack of imagination. Bust a Gut was better. From the map, and bearing in mind that it would have been drawn up before the nuke shattered the earth and altered the landscape, it didn't look an impossible journey. It seemed as if there were a couple of places where they'd have to get the unwieldy raft into the shore and manhandle it around particularly steep vertical falls.
Right.
Ryan carefully closed the tumble-down door and stepped back into the bright sunlight. Court Strasser had also taken one of the maps, wishing within 5 minutes that he'd taken several of them. The spray was bad enough, but they were frequently hit by waves of solid white water. But his memory was crystal clear, and he felt fairly confident that he could recall the more dangerous parts. He'd taken the long steering paddle and put himself in the stern of the clumsy yellow raft. The rope around his waist was tied to one of the mooring rings, though he had some doubt about whether he was really safer that way if anything happened. It was obvious that the material of this raft was somewhat frail, and if the craft went down, it would take everyone with it. Rosa was crouched in the middle, head down, face showing no expression at the tumbling and lurching as they went over the next set of rapids. Rafe was kneeling in the bow, face streaming with water, trying to point out any particular hazards to Strasser, raising a right arm or a left. The speed of the racing river made it extremely difficult to control the direction of the raft. In the quieter, slower passages of the river, Port Strasser took time to stand up, balancing against the pitching of the craft, looking behind him for any sign of pursuit. But there was nothing. The blue-green water was calm in the eddying launch place, and they had no problems in getting the unwieldy craft safely afloat. Ryan still had worries about their failure to inflate all the sections fully. The material sagged wearily, and there didn't seem very much freeboard. But he'd wanted to get moving, and the plastic had seemed dangerously fragile.
Tie onto the nearest metal ring, but make sure you use a knot that you can get untied real quick. If anything happens in this river, you got seconds, no more.
I take front.
Jack clambered with his customary nimbleness to the rounded bow, perching himself there with one of the paddles. Ryan chose to take the steering position in the stern himself. The other four split, JB and Mildred going on the starboard side, Christy and Doc to port. The stern mooring rope ran through a thick, rusted iron ring on the side of the jetty. Ryan looked around.
Ready?
Everyone was. He let go of the rope, allowing it to run through his fingers. The current tugged at the bow of the raft, nudging them into the main stream of the river. And they were off. Ryan lost his map even more quickly than Port Strasser. The very first bend on the river brought a vicious back swirl. A large white rock, slick and polished, caught the bow of the raft, lifting it before any of them could react to check it, and dropping the stern so that a wave of dark water broke clear over Ryan. He felt himself heaved into the air, only the tugging rope around his waist keeping him attached to the raft. Arms and legs flailing, he was dumped hard in the bottom of the inflatable, mouth and nose filling with ice-cold water, choking him. The butt of the G-12 swung around and struck him on the side of the head, making him blink dizzily. The map dropped from his hand and whirled away into the white foam and vanished. He managed to hold onto the paddle and fought his way upright, shaking his head to clear it. A quick glance told him his companions were still inside the raft, though everyone had been sent spinning by the massive force of the impact.
Fire blast!
Christy was next to recover, spitting out a mouthful of water, but managing to grin.
If it's like this in the first 100 yards, then what'll it be like after a mile?
Ryan was used to bumping, sickening journeys, locked into the stinking darkness of a rolling war wag. But he never in his entire life experienced anything to compare with that wild ride down the white water of that nameless river in what had once been South Texas.
Reminds me of something I recall hearing a comedian once say about flying. This is very similar. He said that it was hours of boredom interspersed with moments of stark terror.
Jack had started throwing up within a quarter mile of their start and continued being sick for the first hour and a half. Rand would have thought it impossible for the Albino teenager to look more pale than usual, but Jack achieved a greenish pallor of a frightening hue. Much of their